Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
This is Carrie Lynn Evans welcoming you back to New Books and Secularism, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I'm looking forward to sharing with you Atheism in 5 Minutes by Professor Teimu Tyra. Atheism in 5 Minutes is part of Equinox Publishing Religion in 5 Minutes series. It offers insights into a number of commonly held questions about the ideas, practices, and attitudes concerning atheism and atheists. The volume highlights approaches based on the study of religion, sociology, history, anthropology, politics, and psychology. It also examines the implications and assumptions in common questions about atheism. Ideal for both classroom use and personal study, some of the questions asked include, are atheists immoral? Are children born atheist? Do atheists have rituals? How has atheism related to politics? Why do some atheists remain members of religious groups? Is it difficult to be an atheist in Muslim countries? Do atheist parents have atheist children? Why are there so few Black atheists? What are the most atheistic societies? And has the internet made atheism more popular? We'll get to some of those today. Each chapter is based on the latest research written by a leading scholar in the field. They offer concise and thoughtful answers along with suggestions for further reading. Because each chapter can be read in about 5 minutes, the books of this series offer ideal supplementary resources in classrooms or an engaging read for those curious about the world around them. Teimu Tyra is a senior lecturer in the study of religion, University of Helsinki, and docent at the Department of Study of Religion, University of Turku, Finland. He researches religion in the media, atheism, secularism, and non-religion, and the discursive study of religion as a category. This year, he has also published Taking Religion Seriously, Essays on the Discursive Study of Religion with Brill, which has also been discussed on the New Books Network recently. So I will put a link to that in the blog post. He joins me today to talk about his Atheism in 5 Minutes. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Secularism. Teimu, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with you. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to work in your field.
Institutionally speaking, I've always been in the study of religion departments ever since I started my studies in early 1990s. So, I mean, to cut a long story short, I did my studies at the University of Turku, Finland. Then after PhD, I moved to Leeds, worked at the University of Leeds for a couple of years. Then I moved back to Turku until I was offered a job from the University of Helsinki in 2015, and I've been here ever since. But regarding the topic we are talking today, my research on atheism started, I would say, 2004 or 5, approximately. And I think I published first pieces in Finnish language in 2007. Then maybe 2012, the first English language publications. And 2014, I published a Finnish language monograph on the new visibility of atheism that was focusing quite strongly on so-called new atheism. And I've been working on and off with these topics ever since. Although that is atheism is not my only area, but so I would say that even in this area, I've been working for something like a bit more than 15 years.
Okay, so next, maybe tell us how you came to be the editor for this particular book.
Yeah, that was in summer 2020 when I was having email conversations with Russell McCutcheon, who's one of the editors of this book series. And then I asked, I mean, we were having conversation about completely other issues, but then I asked whether there's anyone who has proposed the topic atheism for this series. And no one hadn't proposed that. And then I think Russell asked something like, do you think that there would be enough interesting questions to cover? Because the idea is that in this book series, there's something like 60 to 80 short chapters focusing on questions. And then I think I replied something that in the Cambridge History of Atheism, there are 60 chapters, and in the Oxford Handbook on Atheism, there's 46 chapters. So I think that we can easily get enough interesting questions for this topic. And that was the background story. Then soon after we had decided that, okay, I'm going to start editing this book.
Right. So yeah, I wanted to start by asking you about the series. Equinox Publishers has an entire series called Religion in 5 Minutes, of which this is one part. And if you could just talk about what niche are they trying to fill with the series of books? What audience are they trying to reach? And can you tell us anything about some of the other books in this series that have come out so far?
Yes, I can tell something about that. I don't want to speak on behalf of the editors of the series or the publisher as such. And I don't know all the details and background. But so far, I think 5 books have been published in this series. One is Religion in 5 Minutes. Then there's a book about Buddhism, Hinduism, and indigenous religious traditions. And there are more to come. The idea is that each chapter can be read in approximately 5 minutes. So they are very short chapters. And all the chapters are based on questions. And it is typical for the series that many questions, or even most of the questions, are based on actual student questions. So it is not the case that just editors decide what is worth asking regarding the topic. And if we think about the readership, I think there are at least 3 possible answers to that. First is that we should think about first-year students who don't know much about the topic. These are not really typical textbooks, but these are sort of maybe complicating the answers textbooks often give. But the idea is that this can be used in teaching, not necessarily as part of the course on atheism, but in almost any kind of entry level course dealing with religion, non-religion, worldviews, and so on and so forth. So because these are short chapters, these are great discussion starters in a classroom. So that's one thing. Novice readers or first-year students. But also, I would say that general readers who don't necessarily know much about the topic, but are somehow interested in the topic and they have a question, they may find interesting answers from this book and books in this series. I mean, just to give one example, some months ago, I was in a meeting invited by local free thinkers to talk about these topics. And, And they were really interested in this forthcoming book. Well, it's now published, but then it was still forthcoming. And also, having read or at least browsed all the books published in the series, I would also say that even established scholars can learn and enjoy reading the books in the series. Myself, for example, I have learned quite a lot reading those other books. And also when I was editing this one, I learned myself quite a bit. So these although books have their main target audience, I would say that this series is not limited to the main target audience.
Excellent. So I wanted to ask you more about the chapters themselves. As you mentioned, this series, each book has a really large number of short chapters. This one has 64, written by yourself and about 45 other authors, I think, if I can count correctly, that contribute to writing these chapters. Some of them write more than one. And each one, as you mentioned, each chapter is centered on answering a particular question about atheists or atheism. So could you talk a little bit more about the process of coming up with these questions?
Yes. As I mentioned already, the idea is that it is not just the editor who decides what is worth asking. And when I started this process, I wasn't teaching because I was on 6 month sabbatical at that time. And I contacted two of my colleagues who were teaching introductory course to the study of religion at the University of Helsinki, that if they could ask students to pose questions, first year students mainly. And I received something like 200 questions. And I used those questions when selecting interesting topics. I wasn't obviously able to choose all. I combined different questions or divided one question to several if needed. So that was one way of getting those questions. Then I also browsed through different publications regarding atheism and non-religion and wanted to see what type of issues are covered and whether some questions would come up by those means. And I also tried to figure out what stereotypical conceptions people have about atheism and whether some of those might help me to formulate some of the questions. And I even asked my friends and who are not necessarily academics, what would they like to know about atheism and what would be the question they would pose? And then I combined those questions and there's obviously the final decisions are mine, but I have not initiated all those questions myself.
So I wanted to ask you if you were involved yourself in choosing the other authors, the other contributors, and if you could tell us a little bit about them and their expertise.
Yes, this was a laborious process, and I chose all the authors. I contacted many authors I knew, and then I did a lot of searching by Google and found some potential authors that way. Then I consulted my colleagues. Some contributors actually suggested me to contact this or that person, and that's how I was able to find some good contributors. So what I wanted to do is to get a good amount of variety among scholars who write to this book. So I wanted to get some kind of geographical variety so that people from different parts of the world could could contribute, obviously. The end result is quite strongly Euro-American, but maybe that reflects the study of atheism. Then I wanted to get some gender balance, even a little bit in variety in terms of ethnicity. I wanted to get people from different career stage, some early career scholars, some established professors. However, I didn't want to use variety as a forced criteria. I always wanted to find the best possible person to cover the topic, to cover the question. Luckily, many agreed to join the project. Some declined. I mean, it should be kept in mind that I was sending these requests in the middle of pandemia. So people were busy rescheduling their everyday life because of the COVID situation. So some of the potential authors couldn't join. In terms of expertise, I think this combination of contributors covers quite nicely different fields and disciplines. I mean, my background is in the study of religion, and I'm maybe leaning towards that myself in selecting good authors, but there are historians, people studying politics, sociologists, anthropologists, psychologists, and even some philosophers and theologians. I have to say that I wanted to include some philosophers and theologians, but I wanted to keep them in a minority and put more emphasis on history, politics, sociology, anthropology, and psychology. That was my decision. But overall, I would say that this end result is quite strongly multidisciplinary project.
Excellent. So in order to give the listeners a sense of the kinds of questions that this book addresses, I've selected a few to ask you about in detail. But let's start with the basics. How do you define atheist or atheism in your book?
In this book, individual authors have the freedom to define atheism. I mentioned in the preface that obviously there are two key ways in defining atheism. One is the analytical one, that, okay, people who lack beliefs in God, gods, or supernatural phenomena, or deny their beliefs in such phenomena. That's one way to approach, and quite many contributors follow that definition. But atheism can be also understood as an identification. So simply, we can also address people who identify themselves as atheists. And I wanted to keep that tension, if there's any, for pedagogical purposes, so that, because that tension reflects the actual study of atheism. So readers need to ask themselves if it's not clear. It should be clear from reading the chapters, but what type of definition individual contributors follow when they are addressing the question. But also, I would also say that although atheism is in the title of the book, I have also emphasized that some contributors are more leaning towards other terms such as non-religion or secular, or some even write at some point about unaffiliated people. So there's this variety as well. And I would also like to mention that there are some chapters focusing on these definitional issues in particular. For example, the first chapter written by Nathan Alexander is titled, "What does the term atheism mean?" So it offers a historical examination of the term, how it has developed, how the meaning of atheism has developed in time. and Changed. And then second chapter by Christopher Cotter is titled, What is the Difference Between Atheism, Agnosticism, Non-Religion, and Secular? So there are some chapters where that is the main issue in the first place.
Excellent. So my next question is there such a thing as an atheistic religion?
Yeah, that is one of the chapters I've written myself. And it should be mentioned perhaps here that this chapter is followed by individual chapters addressing some specific traditions and areas, like ancient Greece and Rome, Judaism, Buddhism, Christian atheism, Islam, pagans and Satanists, and even dialogue between religious people and atheists. And my chapter is sort of introductory examination of this topic. And maybe the key point for me personally is not answering directly, are there atheistic religions, but to challenge the question itself by asking students to consider what is at stake when people make claims about some religion being atheistic. Does that make a religion inauthentic or less valuable? Or does it make the tradition more rational, for example, compatible with scientific worldview? So in some sense, this chapter is an example of the overall attitude in this whole book series, that these do not provide simply answers to the question, but also problematize the question, and in that manner aim to help students or readers to think themselves and learn themselves more about the topic and the way we ask questions.
And in that vein, I should mention as well for listeners that at the end of each chapter, you also include your sources, but as well recommended reading. Is that right? For more on that question?
Yes. And I think that in electronic versions, there are even cross-references now for other books published in the series.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well, this brings me to the topic of chapter 25, and that's the question, what makes atheists different from the rest of the population, if anything?
Yes, that is the typical sociological question. And I think we can say quite convincingly that the key difference between or key character of atheists in most societies is related to gender. So men are much more likely to be atheists than women. Another key character is age, or maybe it's better to talk about generations. So younger generations are typically more likely to be atheists than older generations. And third key issue is urbanization. Like people living in cities are much more likely to be atheists than people living in countryside, for example, or small towns. So these have become so common among scholars that no one really challenges anymore these things until new evidence comes up. I would also add political positioning, in a sense that atheists are more likely to be liberal leaning or leaning towards left, if we talk about left, center, right positions in a political continuum. However, some of those aspects usually picked up in popular discourse, such as education and intelligence, they are much more contested issues. There's data showing that atheists are perhaps more intelligent or more educated than the rest of the population, but this is not consistent. So it changes from one country to another. So it's not something that would really make atheists different from the rest of the population in many countries.
Yeah, so I've got another question for you from the sociological realm. There's a couple of really interesting chapters back to back that go further into these demographic questions. So the first one is, why are some societies more atheistic than others?
Yes, it should be mentioned that this chapter is preceded by the question, what are the most atheistic societies? And that chapter is written by Isabella Castle-Strand. So my chapter, why are some societies more atheistic than others, is a sort of continuation of that topic. And I basically lay out some of the key sociological theories concerning the explanations of why some societies are more atheistic than others. And one of the sort of almost universal hypotheses is that when we are talking about societies in which existential security is on high level, meaning that when societies are wealthy and they have social security networks, then those societies are becoming less religious and consequently slightly more atheistic, although it has to be underlined that not all people who are leaving religion or rejecting religion are becoming card-carrying atheists. Most people actually are indifferent towards these issues. But that's one of the key theories at the moment. But there are also more historical explanations that the historical process of modernization is the explanatory framework to answer why some societies are more atheistic than others. But there are also even more local explanations, something like those pointing towards European exceptionality, that it's not just modernization, but Europe, specific European history that has led Europe to be quite secular in comparison to other societies. And I only add to that question about identification. So none of these key theories answer directly to the question whether atheism as an identity is popular in one society and not in others. So I also highlight the definitional question, because these three already mentioned key frameworks start with analytical definition of atheism rather than identification.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN
NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Okay, so that relatedly, is access to the internet involved here? You have a chapter that asks, has the internet made atheism more popular? And I imagine that intersects with this question of why some populations are more atheistic than others as well.
Yes, internet is the sort of one issue that has been discussed, but there's no definite answer to that question. Especially the form of the question is tricky. Has the internet made atheism more popular? Because it's very difficult to distinguish internet as a variable from the rest of the life we have, rest of the factors that are involved. We know for sure that internet and social media has been very important for many atheist individuals and atheist groups and communities. So atheism is lively in social media. But whether the internet itself has made atheism more popular, we don't know for sure. But so far, the existing research suggests that internet is perhaps facilitating people move towards atheism more than towards finding new religious identities. So in that sense, I would say very cautiously that perhaps internet is making atheism slightly more popular. But the more important point is the networking possibilities atheists have been able to form because of internet and social media.
Yes, I noticed that the chapter focused a lot on what the internet brings to people who are already leaning towards atheism, maybe is the way to put it, because of the lack of the social network that atheists sometimes encounter in the real world. And I guess I was thinking of, I believe that there has been some indication that particular religions, I'm thinking of Mormonism and Scientology, for example, there's some evidence to believe that those particular religions have been hurt by their members being able to access more information online that convinces people that maybe there's something fishy about the Mormon version of their own history or about the claims of Scientology, for example. And so I take it that those individual examples, if I understand them correctly, don't reflect a whole lot of other situations among religion. Because I noticed that it seemed that the scholarly research into this question really wasn't going in that direction. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I'm pretty much agree with what you suggest, that some groups are especially vulnerable if people have access to internet and they use it for networking and bonding purposes. I quite often use the example from Finland concerning Protestant revival movement, Lestadianism, which is quite conservative, quite closed. And when people started to share their experiences in discussion forums, soon it became a public issue that there has been some abuse, some difficulties, some maybe sexual abuse and things like that in the community. And that in that way, people became empowered to speak up in public, and it's like a snowball starting to roll down the hill, and things become bigger and bigger. But if we think about, let's say, mainline Christianity, liberal Christianity, I don't think that internet has too much influence on those people, except that internet is one way we spend our time. We spend our time online. So if we think about time before internet and social media, maybe we went to church, but now we think, okay, we can just browse things online and maybe participate to online church if we want to, but maybe nobody cares if we don't. So in that sense, internet can have some influence on let's say, the sort of mainline liberal Christian churches as well. But you are quite right that some groups are more vulnerable than others.
Okay. So your book also addresses questions about atheist representation. For example, it asks, is atheism visible in popular culture?
Yeah, this is one of the topics I'm interested at the moment, because I would say that too little research has been done about atheist representations or representations of atheism and atheists in media and popular culture. There are some, but still that's an area where there's, I would say, lack of research. So I wanted to include those questions to this book to sort of make them more visible as potentially interesting areas of study. And in the chapter on popular culture, I address briefly popular music and digital games, but for the most part, I write about films. And I would say that traditionally, atheism has been represented in films very negatively in a stereotypical manner. But interestingly, there is some kind of shift happening in the first decades of 21st century. There are more films in which there are atheist characters, even main characters, and they are not represented negatively only. It can be a combination of sort of positive representation with some stereotypical aspects included in those films, such as atheists seen as people struggling with meaning of life, struggling with existential issues, atheists being suicidal, and so on and so forth. Even in cases where the overall intention is to give a positive representation of atheism. So I think this is something that we can probably answer again after a couple of years' time, because in recent years there's been more and more, for example, television series in which atheism is somehow addressed.
So beyond popular culture, if we think of the media at large, how would you say atheism is represented there?
Yes, this is one of my favorite topics because I've written quite a lot about religion in the media, how religion is portrayed in the mainstream media, especially news media. And I've been surprised about, again, lack of research concerning atheism, and also about the fact that even many well-educated, clever scholars have the assumption that media is somehow anti-religious. And I think this is a somewhat stereotypical conception. And I always like to point out that if we look at the countries in which have one dominant Christian church or Christian tradition. It is quite typical that mainstream news media supports moderately that tradition or that church. So I would say that mainstream news media is, especially in Europe, is typically favoring liberal Christianity, not conservative Christianity, liberal Christianity over atheist activism.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you as well. So these chapters also cover a really interesting range of questions about the atheist worldview. For example, what do atheists value in religion, if anything?
Yeah, again, I think I should mention that the chapter that precedes this is written by Joel Thiessen and Sarah Wilkins Laflamme, and the question in that chapter is, do atheists value some religions more than other religions? And it is quite clear on the basis of that chapter that Buddhism is the tradition atheists have most positive feelings towards. And from that we can already say that when atheists write anything positive about religion, they often write about Buddhist meditation practices, like Buddhist meditation practices are good, let's just forget the supernatural part. And they want it, they write as if they want the these worldly beneficial aspects of meditation practices without the belief system, right? But then there are other aspects, and I pick up some of the publications, such as Swiss atheist philosopher Alain de Botton and his 2012 book, Religion for Atheists, in which he tries to lay out what positive aspects religion has and what religious traditions and communities can teach atheists. And one aspect he underlines quite strongly is community building, that religious groups and communities are much better in community building and also cooperation in comparison with secular organizations. So that is one key aspect atheists value in religion, in religious traditions and religious communities. But also I would pick up third aspect, and that is rituals. Only some, we know on the basis of previous research, that only some atheists value rituals. Some consider rituals being too religious, even when they don't have any supernatural references. But for the most part, people throughout the world want to mark their important passages in life, whether they are name-giving ceremonies, marriage, funeral, or other ceremonies. And atheists and secular people don't necessarily have any traditions or frameworks, ready-made frameworks to those passages. So I would say that those three aspects are three important ones: meditation practices, community building, and rituals that we can find from existing literature written by public intellectuals who identify themselves as atheists.
Excellent. So while you were working on this project, was there a question you found really unexpected, or perhaps an answer that really surprised you?
It is difficult to say whether I was surprised at any point. If I was, I have forgotten that feeling. But I want to highlight that the existing questions that ended up in the book, some of them are actually quite surprising questions. For example, chapter 54, written by Jonathan Lanman, the question is, do atheists have beliefs in supernatural phenomena? Now, some people would say that this is contradictory. Namely, if you have beliefs in supernatural phenomena, you are not really an atheist. But as the chapter shows, if we ask from self-identifying atheists whether they believe in this or that, it turns out that some of them actually have beliefs in supernatural phenomena. So atheism quite often actually means that you reject the idea concerning one true omnipresent, all-knowing God who has created the world, but not all the ideas concerning healing and astrology and things like that. So I think that is an example of surprising question that ended up in the book.
Are there any other chapter topics that you'd like to bring up?
Not really, but I'd like, now I've been talking mostly about the chapters I've written myself, but I like to highlight the variety in terms of disciplines and questions. So we have some of those historical questions. I'm not a specialist in ancient Greece and Rome, but we have questions dealing with that those issues and also geographical variety concerning, for example, is it difficult to be an atheist in Muslim countries? And we have some philosophical questions such as how do atheists deal with the problem of evil? And we have questions focusing on atheist communities such as do atheists have rituals and how are atheists organized? And so I think there are issues on many different levels. Obviously, none of the questions are so thorough that one can be perfectly happy with the answer because they are so short. But I think this hopefully offers a starting point for finding more and asking new questions by those who are interested in the topic.
So you yourself wrote the last chapter as well, which is a fitting one to end on, and that is, what is the future of atheism?
Yes, that was the topic that was sort of proposed by the editors of the series, that type of question would be good to have there. And prediction is difficult, especially when we talk about religion and atheism. But according to predictions, we anticipate that globally, the number of atheists and non-religious people, well, the absolute number is going up, but the proportion of people with no religion is going down because fertility rates are much higher in those areas which are strongly religious. However, secularization is ongoing in many countries, and we know on the basis of previous research that if people are asked whether religion is important for them, that importance or significance is going down in many, many countries. Still, so I lay out those basic things we know on the basis of previous studies concerning the future of atheism. And then I also highlight that we should be a little bit suspicious concerning the predictions. And I end that chapter in asking that although I understand the informative dimension in these studies, I also highlight that we should ask what functions the predictive models of have. Who's making use of those models and for what purposes? Are there some policy decisions proposed on the basis of those? So we should be a little bit careful in not just taking those predictions on at their face value, but be critical of what people are doing on those bases.
Well, Teemu, I've taken up a lot of your time. It's later in Finland. But in the few minutes we have left, can you tell us what you're currently working on?
Yes, this has been a busy year for me personally, because in addition to this edited volume, I finished my own monograph that was published earlier this year. So I'm little by little getting to the new project, and I hope to write a book on representations of atheism and atheists in the news media and media culture. So fulfilling some of the gaps that exist in research I already mentioned. So these chapters I wrote about popular culture and media for this are just sort of minor starting points for something more substantial, I hope.
Excellent. That sounds really good. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today. Your book was a real pleasure to read, and I hope that listeners will consider it as a very useful resource in covering all aspects of this topic. So I'm really glad you were able to join me today and chat with me about it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to thank you for listening to New Books in Secularism, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Once again, I'm Carrie Lynn Evans, and I've been speaking with Professor Teemu Taira about his new book, Atheism in 5 Minutes, published by Equinox. If you'd like to find out more about Teemu and his work, you can visit his website, teemutaira.wordpress.com, or follow him on Twitter at Teemu Taira, TEEMUTAIRA. If you enjoyed this podcast, please write us a positive review in your podcast player, post about us on social media, or tell a friend. I'm also interested in hearing from you about your thoughts on this podcast and the material we cover. Are you an atheist? Do you feel like the answers to these questions reflected you at all? Do you have any other questions about atheism? You can talk to me about it on Twitter. You can find me at Carrie Lynnland. That's at CarrieLynnland. Do you have a book you'd like covered on one of our shows? Contact us through our website, newbooksnetwork.com. Also, be sure to like the New Books Network page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where you'll see every time we post a new interview. In the meantime, I'll wish you an à la prochaine from Quebec until my next conversation about new books.